Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens, at the heart of Irish homes for over 40 years. Cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
Email todaycb at rte.ie.
God, I think I'm not the only one who's moved by that conversation with Ciarán. Thank you very much for your messages coming in. What a lovely man. I'm going through this with my mum. I feel like crying. Another one, I'm feeling the happiness and the frustration that he went through. I cared for my mum for 10 years with Alzheimer's and she lived with myself and my family, and he's telling my story, which is incredible to know how much others go through the same thing. She passed away last year at 92 and I don't have one regret. Anne in Cork says, when my mum forgot how to move forward, I'd get her to sing and she would walk forward with ease. She loved to sing and it distracted her greatly. Alzheimer's is a cruel disease, and Ciarán writes about the importance of music to his mother. Lyric FM always on in the house, and I think that provided a great comfort to both of them as well when they were going through all of that. Just a reminder of the name of the book, is called Mam and Me, and it's available in shops from Tuesday of next week. Now let's move on. A testy leaders debate that ended in a nil-all draw, an alleged purge of left-wingers from the Labour Party, Nigel Farage getting milkshaked again, and today there's controversy over Rishi Sunak's premature departure from yesterday's D-Day commemorations in France. It's been a tumultuous week on the campaign trail in Britain ahead of their July 4th general election. Mark Paul, the London correspondent with the Irish Times, has really been in the middle of it all. Good morning, Mark.
Morning, Claire. How are you?
Very well. Good to talk to you. I see more news breaking on this D-Day controversy now, because Keir Starmer has been asked about it. Rishi Sunak having to issue an apology. This is becoming quite a big deal.
It is, yeah. I mean, it's been the week from hell for Rishi Sunak, which began terribly with all the Farage stuff, but it's ended even worse, if that were possible. I mean, one thing that you don't do in British politics, especially if you're a Tory prime minister, is you cannot be seen to disrespect the country's military veterans. And it appears that on Thursday, well, we know on Thursday, Rishi Sunak left the D-Day commemorations in Normandy. The 80th anniversary of D-Day was on Thursday. He left those early to come back to Britain. Now, he stayed for the British event in the morning, but he left for the world leaders event in the afternoon, which was attended by Biden and Macron and other world leaders. And it seems he came back to London to record an interview with ITV, which will be broadcast on Wednesday. That's what it seems he came back for. But I mean, as you've already mentioned, he apologised for it this morning. It's been described as political malpractice and naive and misstep and really just bad political judgment. And it's really built up into this big dark pall of criticism around Rishi Sunak. The sense that a campaign that started terribly in the sodding rain is just getting worse and worse for the Tories as time goes on.
Mm-hmm. Then we had the leaders' debate on Tuesday. Rishi Sunak did seem to land a punch on Keir Starmer with that claim around extra taxation. Now, that has since been disproven, I believe. Wasn't really enough for the Tories, though, was it?
It wasn't, no. I mean, he certainly shaded the debate, and he probably came out of it better than Keir Starmer, but he needed a knockout blow and he didn't get it. Yeah, I mean, you mentioned the tax, this accusation by Labour, by the Tories, that Labour would raise every family's tax by £2,000, which there's no real clear evidence for. But the fact that the Tories were quite happy in the spin room afterwards of Manchester, which was actually above the set, or the Coronation Street Visitor Centre was where we watched it from. And in the spin room afterwards, I mean, the Tories were cock-a-hoop. They thought that this was a great performance by their man and that everybody was talking about Labour and tax rising, which is what they wanted people to talk about, whether it was true or not. But that was about as good as it got for the Tories this week, I have to say.
What about for Keir Starmer then? What's been the verdict on him in that debate?
Keir Starmer, in the first half of it, certainly he was a little bit wooden. There was criticism of him that he didn't come back quickly enough to counter this £2,000 tax rise argument. It took him 26 full minutes to do it. And then I think somebody must have gotten in his ear at half time. The suspicion was that it was Pat McFadden, who was one of Labour's top election strategists. And in the second half, he was a bit more aggressive towards Sunak. You could hear him muttering garbage and nonsense and words like that as Sunak was speaking. But Starmer has also been under the microscope for entirely separate reasons. I mean, there's this sense that there's been this purge of left-wing candidates or Corbynite candidates from the party. I mean, 4 p.m. today is when nominations actually close for candidates. And if you look in particular, there's one candidate down in Chingford, a woman called Faiza Shaheen, who came within a hair's breadth of beating Ian Duncan Smith in 2019. She's been banned from standing for the party for these pretty innocuous looking tweets. I mean, a couple of them, okay, you could argue were a bit anti-Israeli perhaps and perhaps a bit vehement on that, but she's been banned. Another guy called Lloyd Russell Moyle down in Bristol, he's been barred from standing, and there's just this sense that Starmer is starting to stamp his authority on the party, pushing out left-wing candidates. Of course, he had to do a bit of a U-turn on Diane Abbott, there's this sense. And Labour today also are in about 30 minutes time, they start their what's known as their Clause 5 meeting, which is at a secret location in London, which is a bit like a Labour's papal conclave, where they decide and finalise its manifesto. That should be finished about 5:30, and then Labour's manifesto should be out the door pretty soon after that.
Okay, that'll be an interesting moment. Now, there are people capitalising on this purge of the left, as it has been called, George Galloway amongst them, accusing Keir Starmer of representing Blairism without the laughs, the polish or the pizzazz, which is a great line, but he is hoping to capitalise on this discontent within the Muslim community, isn't he, over Labour's position on Gaza?
He is. I mean, the morning after the debate in Manchester, I took the train down to Rochdale and I met up with George Galloway, and he was in flying form. I mean, you know, peering out from beneath his fedora hat, as he told me how his Workers' Party of Great Britain was going to take a lot of seats from Labour and because of this anger at Labour in the Muslim community over Gaza. Now, look, I don't know whether how many seats the Workers' Party of Britain will win, but certainly George Galloway seems to think that Labour have done an enormous amount of, or Starmer has done an enormous amount of damage, self-inflicted damage to the party over this. Another seat that the Workers' Party of Great Britain are targeting actually is Angela Rayner's seat, the deputy leader of the Labour Party. I mean, there was a video that did the rounds here last week, I don't know if you saw it, of Angela Rayner filmed on a mobile phone in a room full of men, Muslim community leaders in her constituency.
I did see that, yeah.
Yeah, asking for their vote and saying that, look, they got her over the line the last time. So she has a majority of 5,000 there. George Galloway claims he has 10,000 votes in that constituency for his candidate. It remains to be seen whether or not they will take that seat off Angela Rayner, but certainly they're putting pressure on her there.
Mm-hmm. So you had a chat with George Galloway, who you've been sharing wine with Nigel Farage.
That's right, yeah. Nigel Farage on Monday announced, surprised everybody by announcing his re-entry into the campaign. The previous Thursday, I was at a Reform UK event in London, and Nigel Farage was there swirling his glass of wine, looked me dead in the eye and swore blind he wasn't going to run in the election. He said that he wanted to spend time helping Donald Trump in the United States, and also that he hadn't enough time to get a campaign launch. And lo and behold, 72 hours later, he's on the pier in Clacton-on-Sea announcing that he's going to run. And that is a real, that's probably the worst moment of the week for Rishi Sunak, and potentially the worst moment of the campaign, because the first polling done after Farage's re-entry has showed that Reform are now just 2 points behind the Tories in the polls.
Yeah, how much damage can he realistically do?
They can't win that many seats under the first-past-the-post system. It's unlikely. The way the first-past-the-post system works is that it works against small parties outside of the big two or outside of the big three. He will probably take that seat in Clacton. They may take two or three more. But what they will do is that they will take votes off Labour and possibly take votes off the Tories and possibly allow Labour to come through the middle in some battleground seats. So they will cost the Tories a lot of seats, particularly in these red wall areas. These are working-class areas of the north and the Midlands that Boris Johnson won in 2019, that Labour are aiming to win back, and that Rishi Sunak won't have been popular in this morning for being seen to disrespect military veterans. That would have been a big thing up there.
Okay, now there's another debate happening tonight, isn't there?
There is. There's a seven-way debate tonight, which is none of the party leaders are involved in it, apart from Farage is the only party leader involved in it. But it's a seven-way. So you've got Angela Rayner will be there. You've got Penny Mordaunt on behalf of the Tories, Farage. Then you've got Stephen Flynn, the Westminster leader of the SNP, who's actually probably the best orator who will be at that. It's worth tuning in just to hear him alone. And it'll be interesting to see whether or not they all pile in on Penny Mordaunt, who is seen as a potential contender to replace Rishi Sunak. And also the dynamic between Rayner and Farage will be interesting to see as well. And because in a sense, they both have a kind of a shared interest, I would say, in both almost teaming up on Penny Morton. So we'll see how that goes.
Mm-hmm. And then we'll have two more leaders' debates between Starmer and Sunak before we get to polling day.
Yeah. I think at least one. At the start, they agreed to two. BBC have announced some. I'm not sure, actually. Maybe you're ahead of me on this one, but I'm not sure if the third one between them has been announced yet. But certainly, okay, there will be another one at BBC one.
All right. I thought there were two because we were saying the other day, you know, it maybe is a little strange for Keir Starmer to agree to these debates when he can only lose given where they're at in the polls.
He does, but he doesn't really have to win them either. And because he's so far ahead, all he has to do is just not lose them disastrously. I mean, you've probably heard over and over again this what they call the Ming Vase strategy of Labour, which is Keir Starmer has to tiptoe his way to Downing Street whilst carrying this, you know, enormously valuable Ming Vase. Just don't be doing any headstands. Don't try and juggle it. Don't smash it. Just carefully tiptoe your way to Downing Street. Let the Tories destroy themselves in chaos and you'll become Prime Minister on July the 5th.
Mark, I'm sure we'll speak again before that point. For now, though, thank you very much, Mark Paul, London correspondent with the Irish Times. Now, Iceberg, Gem, Rocket and Romaine. Nevin Maguire will tell us how to choose the best summer salad leaves. That's next.
Text 51551 today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.